Okay, how's that for volume? Can you hear me up top? Good? You can hear me? All right. Let's see what we can do. Okay, we have the exams and analysis exercises down here. You can pick them up after. Invitation, again, for those in HDFS or who are interested. Tonight, we'll talk about what can you do with it. That's in B101 at 6. We'll go as long as anybody wants to, but if we're done by 6:30, we'll be done. So if you get there at 7:30 and there's nobody there, that's why. This is the distribution for exam 2. Okay. And I'm sorry, I couldn't get the points to display there. I will next time after Julie teaches me how to do that. But the average was 50 or so, which is probably right in here somewhere. Okay. So again, it's actually maybe closer to 51. So it's almost exactly the same average as last time. And we also have the distribution of total points available, but I couldn't get it today, but I will have it on Monday along with some comments about the exam itself. Just a reminder, the key to the multiple choice is posted outside C150 most of the time and during the working week. And the instructions for the second exam analysis are on the website. And before you spend a lot of time doing it, make sure that you read the instructions for the second exam analysis because it's different than the first one. If you didn't do the first one, follow the instructions for the first one but analyze the second exam with them. Is that clear? Yes. Okay. Some of you went today to find it and it wasn't there. Right? Any of you? Good. None of you were inconvenienced. Good. Any of you live in C building? You were inconvenienced this morning, weren't you? Okay. The reason I don't have the distribution of total scores and I don't have the analytic comments to make is that for those of you who don't know, we had another bomb threat this morning in the child care center, so the building was evacuated. And all the offices were, our office was shut down. Until the dogs came through and certified that we didn't need to worry about the building coming down around our ears. So, I would like to ask that if any of you hear rumors or hear somebody laughing about having done it, that you please call the university police. We would like to find out who put the notes in the center. My personal desire is that the person apologize personally face-to-face to the 40 sets of parents who had to come and pick up their children today and find other child care arrangements. So it's a major inconvenience. It's also extremely distressing to the staff and me. So an apology to me would be helpful too. No, it wouldn't. Yes, it would. Okay. All right. Questions? Yes? I'm sorry? What the highest score on this exam? I'm sorry, is that the question? The range was mid-20s to mid-70s, low 70s. So it was a broader distribution than the first one. I'll have all that data for you Monday when I have more access. Okay, we were talking about one of my favorite theorists, Murray Bowen, and I'm going to go back to him. and just remind you where we were with that. As we look at personality and social development, we begin with, and I didn't say this on Monday, but I wanted to reiterate it. Remember when we talked about newborns? I made the point in the biological unit that they come with, newborns arrive with, the foundation for social interaction. Remember, they look at faces, their gaze is pretty much fixed at about the distance away faces would be. They listen to voices preferentially. That provides the basis for social interaction. And then the reflexes that they have begin the process of creating reciprocal games. As parents stimulate children's reflexes, children respond, parents respond appropriately, and that leads us into interpersonal relationships. And we'll elaborate on that a little bit more when we talk specifically about attachment and how we create the preference to be with particular people. Children also come with the capacity to experience physiological states, both positive and negative, in response to particular situations and stimuli. And that's where we begin with the definition of development of maturity. Now, Bowen, in looking at the kinds of relationships that we develop, found it helpful to think about the way we learn to deal with our emotions, since emotions are often stimulated by our relationships with other people. Think about the times you get really annoyed, really angry, really scared, really happy. When you feel really content, it's likely that in many of those situations, other people are involved. So emotions are a central component in our relationships with other people. Bowen emphasized that negative emotions particularly can be overwhelming. We can be flooded by our emotions. And what happens when we're flooded, when we're experiencing very strong emotions, is that we stop being able to think and make decisions. Yep. So, for Bowen, there's a fundamental process happening in development, which is that as we are developing our cognitive and behavioral skills, we're learning to understand the world, we're learning to manage our behavior in it, we're getting more and more skilled at doing the things that we want as children and as adolescents and on into adulthood, we are at the same time learning to understand and deal with our emotions and other people's emotions. The part of learning about ourselves is understanding our emotions. Part of learning about other people and the world generally is understanding their emotions and being able to figure out how to manage, how to cope with, how to be in the presence of your own emotions and other people's emotions. What do you do when your parent is really upset? What do you do when you're a baby and you can sense that your mother is trying to feed you, but she's really stressed and tense, and the milk doesn't come down, and you're not getting fed, and you're really hungry, and you're crying because you're hungry, and she's stressed by that? How does this dance between the mother and the child progress? How do you learn to deal with those situations where you want something, or you need something, or you're feeling a particular way, and another person is either taking care of you or not taking care of you, and is putting his or her own emotions into the transaction that you're having? So for Bowen, it was helpful to describe a very simple notion of emotional maturity as the progressive differentiation and integration of those two major, what he calls the engines of human behavior. One engine is our feelings, our emotions. The other engine for him was thinking, the cognitive processes, the rational processes. And so both of those are present. Both of them are happening. Both of them are changing as we develop. Our ability to express our emotions changes, and our thinking changes. We've already looked at cognitive development. What he got interested in was the relationship between our feeling and our thinking. And he starts with the notion that we're not very differentiated at the beginning. As infants. As infants, I'm going to flip the lights back on here. Right, there we go. I want you to see the board. I'm going to do a simple diagram. What Bowen describes is the situation where in infancy, emotion and cognition, because neither is particularly well developed, are very closely united. The babies don't think a lot. They don't have a lot of skill at thinking. And they feel in response to the situations that they're put in. And we know about crying babies. We know about happy babies. Okay. What's going to happen as they develop is as their thinking skills develop and their emotions become more differentiated, they're also going to separate the two. So they're going to gradually come to understand that there is a difference between feeling and thinking. And we're going to help them do that. We're going to talk to them about their feelings, and we're going to help them understand their feelings and deal with their feelings. And as they're learning to think about the world generally, they're also going to be thinking about their feelings. And as they develop, their ability to think and understand their feelings is going to increase. If we teach them about feelings, if we teach them the labels, if we teach them to understand where emotions come from and what is appropriate to do when you're feeling something, negative or positive. When you feel something positive, do you tell somebody? Amazing. Amazing to think about some of you having relatives who say they love you and that they feel it all the time, but they never tell you. And when they do, it's kind of fun, isn't it? Some of you can remember the once or twice that a grandparent actually said, "I love you. I think you're really neat." People feel it. They insist that they feel it all the time, but they don't say it. Part of dealing with emotions that has to be learned is what to do. And that's cognitive. Learning to understand emotions, learning what it is you're feeling, making decisions about what to do, how to act, what to say when you're feeling irritable, when you're feeling happy, when you're feeling erotic, when you're feeling really, really satisfied, when you're feeling really anxious, when you have all of those words, that's all cognitive. It's vocabulary. It's vocabulary about your feeling states, and it has to be learned. It doesn't come naturally. So what Bowen suggested is that we can think about the process of development as a process that includes the gradual differentiation of emotions, the gradual development of cognitive skills that include understanding emotions, and the ability to put your thinking and your feeling together, to integrate, to differentiate them so that you understand that they are separate, and then to integrate them so that you can both feel and think at the same time. Okay, so you're not being overwhelmed by feeling, so that you're less likely to be flooded. So that even if you're feeling very strong emotions, you can make appropriate decisions. You can act rationally. For Bowen, that's the definition of emotional maturity, the ability to understand the emotions that you're feeling, to interpret them, to know what is triggering them, and to be able to think and behave rationally, to make good decisions while you are feeling strong emotions. And on the other side of the coin, to understand other people's emotions and to understand the difference between theirs and yours, so that the emotions, remember, they're contagious. Other people's emotions don't flood you. Okay. So there are two differentiations taking place in Bowen's presentation. One is the differentiation between emotion and feeling and thinking, and the other is the differentiation between self and other. Particularly, to know the difference between your feelings that you may be catching from the other person and the other person's feelings. When another person in our presence, and I mentioned this, I said this on Monday, but let me iterate it. When another person is feeling very strong emotions, we are likely to catch those emotions and to feel strongly too. So when other people cry and are upset, we tend to cry with them. When other people are very happy, we tend to smile with them. We sometimes laugh with them. We feel good in the presence of people who are smiling. We like that. We catch it. Emotional maturity involves being able to maintain the awareness that the other person's feelings are not yours. The other person may be crying because he or she has suffered a loss or is very anxious about something. What we're feeling is our empathy with that. But it doesn't mean we have to be feeling the same loss. We can be feeling the grief, but we don't have the same loss. The other person is feeling anxious and we can feel that, but that doesn't mean we have to feel anxious. The other person may be angry and out of control. We may be afraid or concerned or anxious about that, but it doesn't mean we have to get angry. So Bowen is asserting that everybody gets to have his or her own feelings. And a mature person understands that. And a mature person is free to feel the empathy, the contagion, but make the distinction between what that person's situation is and what the mature person's situation is. Okay, so you keep them separate. So Bowen says infants are not very highly differentiated. In fact, they're not differentiated at all. Emotion and thinking are about the same thing for them. And gradually, we become more and more differentiated. Some of us get to about there, and some of us keep on developing, and become much more emotionally mature. So the difference between the moderately differentiated person and the highly differentiated person is in the kinds of ways they deal with feelings. And when a person has difficulty dealing with feelings, his own, other people's, and has difficulty making decisions or thinking or understanding things when there are strong feelings, that person is not as highly differentiated as he or she might be, and that affects their relationships. So the person who is not particularly mature emotionally lets emotions drive the action. They're at the mercy of their feelings, and that drives their actions, and they often behave emotionally and inappropriately. Inappropriately emotionally. And they're often driven by their anger or their anxiety, rather than making decisions that are intelligent about what to do with their anger and anxiety. At a higher level of differentiation, a person is able to have the feelings and express them appropriately, to understand other people's feelings and take them into account, and not be driven by the feelings. To decide, what do you want to do? You're extremely angry. That's fine. Perhaps quite justified to be quite angry. What do you do with it? How do you behave? Do you hit people? Do you scream and yell at the children who are making you angry? No. That's a low level of differentiation. You can be extremely angry and make intelligent, rational decisions, one of which might be to walk away from the situation. To be able to say, I am totally out of control right now, I'm having difficulty being an adult, I'll be back in half an hour. Or if I calm down, I'll come back. Right? But I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not going to threaten you. I'm not going to make you anxious any more than I have to. That's your choice. And now I'm going to go deal with my anger or my anxiety in an appropriate way. Doesn't mean I don't feel it. The highly emotionally differentiated person is able to understand and to express the feeling. You can say, I'm ready to ship bricks, but I'm not going to do that in a way that's going to harm you. Okay. Don't worry about me. I'm not going to blow up. But I want everybody to know I'm extremely angry. That's the highly differentiated person's approach to dealing with strong emotions. Yes. I'm sorry. Yep. The question is, could you argue that this is one, I would argue two, particular types of intelligence? Gardner does argue that. And clearly, people do not become highly differentiated. Lots of people do not become highly differentiated. Which intelligences do you think would be involved? The intrapersonal and the interpersonal. So the intrapersonal intelligence is that one that reflects the ability to understand yourself and your own feelings and your own thoughts. That's clearly part of what Bowen is referring to, that ability. And the interpersonal is to understand the effects of your behavior on other people. To understand empathy, to understand what other people are feeling and thinking, and to be able to develop the skill to deal, to transact in those relationships in ways that's helpful. So exactly, Bowen is describing skills, a kind of development that connects to one of, or two of, a combination of those two intelligences that Gardner describes. And Gardner refers to those two intelligences as the emotional intelligences. Those two. And if you read, and I recommend that you read Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence, he takes the combination of Bowen and other people who have similar thoughts and Gardner and says, how do you develop that emotional intelligence? And the way we develop that is by helping people understand emotions, label them, interpret situations where emotions are being felt, and then develop a repertoire of behaviors for dealing with them, for dealing with other people while we're feeling strong emotions, for dealing with other people when they're feeling strong emotions. Good question. Other questions? Okay. How far are you going to go in becoming emotionally differentiated, emotionally mature? Well, that's probably dependent on the kinds of transactions that you have in emotional situations with other people. Though Bowen argues that it's the family system and the transactions that you have with your parents and siblings that provides the learning situation for emotional differentiation. And some parents who themselves are emotionally mature can help you learn to become emotionally differentiated. And some parents who splash their emotions all over and don't understand their own or yours and don't behave appropriately when there are strong emotions in the room, those people are probably not going to help you very much. Bowen suggested that we probably all grow up pretty much like our parents or the people that we hang out with most. And there's certainly not much evidence to contradict that. One of the open questions is, how much can other people do? If you're growing up in a family that's not very highly differentiated, has a lot of trouble with emotional behavior, can other relationships help you learn? Help you deal with them differently? I think anybody who works as a child therapist would argue that they hope they can help kids become more differentiated. Part of what you do in working with children and adolescents is help them figure out how to deal with the emotional immaturity of their families and help them become more, help the client become more emotionally differentiated. Bowen, in practicing family therapy, said you try to teach the whole family. You try to help them all understand that the way they deal with emotions is probably not particularly helpful, and there are other options. There are ways to behave in emotional situations that don't hurt or threaten or make other people anxious. There are ways that can help other people in the family understand how you're feeling so that they might, in fact, behave helpfully. But a lot of us have difficulty with that. Some of you have probably grown up with or tried to have relationships with people who assume that you can read their minds. Right? If you loved me, you'd know how I feel. Give me a break. You know, tell me how you feel. I expect you, this is a line I encourage people to use in relationships. I expect you to know yourself and to make yourself known. I can't know you without you giving me some help. If you want me to know how you feel, it might be useful if you put that out there on a table in appropriate ways. John Wayne didn't know how to do that, right? In all those westerns, that persona that he created. What do you do with feelings? You stuff them in your back pocket. Right? That's a psychological process. You stuff your feeling in your back pocket. You don't let it bother you. You go ahead and make rational decisions, even though your heart is broken, even though the world is falling apart around you. It's okay. You go ahead and behave rationally, including blowing away that bastard who made you feel that way. That's the John Wayne approach. I love John Wayne movies. Love John Wayne movies. He's always surrounded by people who are very immature, and he's right there with them. Always watch to the end of a John Wayne movie. What happens in the end? What? What happens to John Wayne in the end?
He gets on the horse and he rides away.
Does he ever get laid? No. Does he ever get any more than a kiss and a hug that embarrasses him to death? No. One of the consequences of being emotionally immature and not being able to put your emotions out there in an appropriate way is that people let you be the Lone Ranger, the John Wayne. Go out there, ride the fences, be cold and lonely, develop all kinds of disorders in your late middle age and die young. That's what's going to happen to you. Okay. We have that image. What Bowen is describing as emotional immaturity is the ability to feel, the freedom to feel appropriately in a situation, strongly in a situation, to be able to express that so that other people understand how you're feeling and they don't have to guess, but to express it in ways that let them know and don't make them anxious, and don't make them angry, and don't make them afraid. So you put your feelings out, talk about what you would like, and give them the opportunity to create a closer relationship with you so that the two of you can feel together safely. Because what happens when you really feel good and safe with somebody else who's feeling the same way? Love? Liking? You know? Warmth? Joy? All of those wonderful feelings happen when people are able to share their feelings, to both express their positive feelings and not be afraid of those positive feelings. Love and comfort also come when people can share their negative feelings openly in a way that doesn't make for more negative feelings. How do you feel when a little kid comes up and snuggles up and says, I'm feeling sad? You dump the kid on the floor? No, you don't. You protect. You're thrilled. If you're me, you're thrilled that the kid feels safe enough in your lap to tell you how he feels. And that brings out all that wonderful parental nurturing. Okay, you're safe here. When people can express their feelings openly, both positive and negative feelings, and talk about them, and understand each other's feelings without getting upset about them, then you have the basis for a relationship that has much more richness, much more potential for support, for reciprocity, for mutuality, for intimacy, because the anxiety level and the guessing are down. Any relationship that makes you anxious about the other person's feeling, or that you're guessing all the time, trying to guess what the person is feeling because that person isn't telling you, or where you're just waiting for the person to blow up, so you're walking on eggshells all the time, that relationship can't be healthy. And will not be healthy until the other person and you become able to put feelings out and express them in ways that will allow you to deal with them and continue to make decisions and be with each other without the anxiety.
Yes.
Okay. To recap, what we're looking for in emotional maturity is the awareness of the difference between emotion and thought, understanding of your own feelings and the triggers, differentiation of your own feelings from the feelings of others, so that you know when you're angry, that doesn't mean everybody else has to be angry. The ability to think and act while experiencing the feeling, experiencing your own feeling and the other person's feelings. And we refer to that as having the freedom to feel. Not stuffing. Not controlling in the sense that you don't express your feelings. Not denying that you are angry, anxious, upset, or in love, or whatever the feeling is. Not denying it. But being free, being safe, feeling responsible for your own emotions, comfortable with your own emotions, which allows you to feel them and enjoy them and wallow in them and share them with other people to reach the intimacy that most of us, whether we know it or not, are looking for in relationship. Okay, I think I already said all that. And that's on the web. And I said this, but I want to review it, that the level of emotional maturity is related to the kinds of relationships that you have. If you're anxious in relationship, that's probably a reflection of the emotional immaturity of one or both of you and or the relationship. At low levels of differentiation, at lower levels of emotional maturity, people are driven by their emotions. And in Bowen's view, and I think the research supports it, that at higher levels of differentiation, people have better relationships. They're less concerned about being approved and loved, because they're comfortable with the fact that they are. Or they approve of and love themselves, and if other people don't, that's unfortunate, but maybe understandable. And they have fewer life problems. They also live longer. Fewer symptoms of all sorts. His is a transactional view of relationships. Remember transactions? What happens in a relationship is between two people, each of whom comes into a relationship with a particular level of emotional maturity. And Bowen says that it's pretty typical that people gravitate toward other people who are about at the same level of emotional maturity. So when you see those relationships that may be very intense, but there's a lot of anxiety on both people's parts, a lot of bad, negative feeling, a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, a lot of anger, that those relationships tend to be because two people who have low levels of emotional maturity are attracted to each other, and they create a volatile relationship. When you see those relationships like some of your parents have, or the ones you admire in grandparents or other relatives, you see two people who deal with emotions really well. They have a rich relationship. There's very little anxiety. There's no anger. There's lots of fun. You look at those relationships, and typically they are between two people who are attracted to each other and can live with each other because they are both highly emotionally mature. What happens to the others, where one person is highly differentiated and the other person is low? Those are often also quite attractive but they don't last long. Bowen says that when you get a person who is not very differentiated in a relationship with somebody who is, it's unlikely that the person who's highly differentiated is going to be able to stay in that relationship very long, because the other person is going to be seen as needing some work. I think there's another reason why those uneven relationships don't last. And this is the Pollyanna optimist in me. Okay, so take it with a grain of salt. I think what happens sometimes is that people who are not particularly well differentiated get into relationships with people who are much more differentiated, and they come up to their level or closer to it. So I think it doesn't last as an uneven relationship between a mature and an immature person. I think what, in my view, and again, I don't have a lot of data for this, I think it's possible that the transactions with somebody who really deals with emotions well allows the other person to become more differentiated. You learn in relationships. Bowen was not as optimistic about that, but I like to differ with him on this one, because I think one of the ways we become more differentiated, both as children and as adults, is to be with people who are more differentiated than we are. People who can help us understand our emotions without necessarily being therapists, but simply show us better models for being with our emotions. Right. The other side of that potential coin is, does the more differentiated person potentially get pulled down to a lower level of differentiation by the relationship? I think not. Okay. Again, the Pollyanna optimist in me, the developmental progressive, I think that if you're highly differentiated and you're in relationship with somebody who is much less differentiated, part of being highly differentiated is to be able to resist being pulled down to that other person's level. So I think it works in the direction of everybody going in the direction of better development. I hope. But again, take me with a grain of salt, because I could be really wrong. I could be really wrong. If you want to do a nice doctoral dissertation, I'll help you do that. If you want a doctorate in psychology or family relations, it would be really fun to see what happens over the long term. But I think the reality is that people who are highly differentiated eventually recognize that they can't rescue the other person. You're not highly differentiated if you're trying to rescue other people emotionally. They have to do that work themselves. You can support them, but they have to do it. That's part of being highly differentiated. And you can support them in doing it, but if they're not moving in that direction, eventually you make the decision that you can't be in the relationship, particularly if it's trying to be a partner relationship. If it's a parent-child relationship, of course you stay in it, but you work to help the other person become more differentiated. If you have obligation and responsibility to the other person, you stay in the relationship, but that's different. If you're trying to create a partner relationship and you're trying to deal with a person who is not very differentiated, eventually you give up. You know, I don't need this. And your friends will tell you for 3 or 4 years, you don't need it. You don't deserve it. You're being abused. You know, he's not going to change. She's not going to change. So get out of it. And you resist that because you're committed to the relationship and trying to rescue the other person. And eventually, you get killed, or you get hurt, or you get threatened, or you get cheated on, or all of those other things that can happen that finally convince you to leave the relationship. If there are children involved, it's often because you see the children getting hurt. So That's the primary reason why people leave abusive relationships. They see the effect on the children. They'll take abuse themselves, but they won't take it for their children. So they quit. Part of becoming, I think, emotionally mature is coming to accept that you can't make somebody else grow up. You can't solve somebody else's emotional problems. And to be satisfying over the long term, a relationship needs to be between people who consider themselves equals. And if you are always the person who is picking up the pieces and helping the other person deal with his or her messes emotionally, that may be a nice position of power, but it's not a relationship between equals. Both parties need to be able to deal with their own emotions. Both parties need to be able to pick up their own emotional messes. They need to be able to share equally in the emotional process of the relationship. That doesn't mean all relationships are like that. It means that that's an ideal. But if you're the one who's emotionally mature and your partner is not, eventually you begin to feel superior. You know the wives who treat their emotionally immature husbands as little boys and then talk about them and all the stupid stuff they do. That's not a relationship. It's not a mature relationship. But if it's the best you can do, then people put up with immaturity in their partners and putting up with something that ought to be changed. Probably something you ought to question. I've been on that soapbox long enough. I wish you all wonderful relationships with emotionally mature people who are equals and comfortable in your feelings. Feelings are good. Feelings are fun. Even the bad ones are fun afterward. Okay, what's that part about? You've had plenty of time to copy that one down, so I'm going to brighten the lights and talk about one of the wonderful things about Bowen. Very useful concept about relationships. Bowen, in addition to arguing that we all have these two engines, the engine of emotion and the engine of thinking, that we need to get in sync here, but you know, be able to deal with separately. Bowen also suggests that one of the problems with being human is that we really want to be separate and autonomous. And he calls it the separateness force, the individuality force. We all want to be John Wayne. We all want to make our own decisions, take care of ourselves, be self-sufficient, have time alone, and not have other people bug us. And we also, at the same time, want to be together. We're social organisms. So he says there's an equally strong togetherness force. We want to be with other people. We want to have dinner with somebody else. We want to be with somebody. We don't want to be alone. And he argues that therein lies one of the big problems for us. So we all want to be separate, and we all want to be in relationships at the same time. How do you do that? Well, he says we all do it, and we all wrestle with the dynamic tension between making our own decisions, not worrying about other people, taking care of ourselves, and being in relationship, and being affected by other people, and being with other people. So he suggests that in our lives, we kind of cycle back and forth between those two poles. And what we're looking for, most of us, is some way of living that satisfies both, gives us what we need. So I may go through periods of enjoying my separateness and making decisions on my own, and then at other times enjoy being partnered and being with my partner and spending 24/7 with another person and making decisions together. And that probably relates both to history, developmentally, and the kind of relationship that we're in that we're trying to analyze. He suggests that most of us have some kind of comfort range. And those may differ. So I might be the person who is comfortable with a little more separateness. You know, being alone for a month is no problem. And in fact, it might be attractive at times. That's okay. I'm good company for myself. And it's nice not to have to deal with other people. But you don't want to be alone all the time. Another person might have a comfort zone that's a little farther toward the togetherness end. Maybe is comfortable being alone for a week, but not a month. Or maybe an evening, but not a week. And needs a little bit more togetherness. Okay. Understandable? You could probably put yourself someplace. How much do you want other people involved in your life? How much do you need other people to be involved in your life to be comfortable and feel good? And how much do you want to be alone and separate to feel good? And it doesn't have to be the same all the time. It might be seasonal. Deer camp comes along, you want to be with the guys, right? Or the girls, whichever you... Anyway. Okay. Or summer comes along and maybe you're looking forward to your week-long trek all by yourself on your favorite trail, where you're not going to see anybody for a whole week. And that might be something you really prize. So what you're looking for is the combination of togethernesses and alonenesses in enough balance over the course of your whatever, your season or your year, that you're comfortable. So you might put yourself someplace. Some of you know you really don't like other people. Some of you know you can't stand to be alone. 10 minutes, you need to be on the phone, right? You've got to be on the phone because you got to be with somebody. Because you're not really comfortable by yourself. You might want to work on that. Okay, so you know where you are. So far, that's just a difference among us, and it might be an interesting difference. What happens if A and B are partners and their comfort zones don't overlap? What they're trying to do as a couple is figure out how to be a couple with enough time and enmeshment and involvement together to be happy, and enough time alone to be sane. So they start dating and they spend time together. And typically in the beginning of a relationship, what do, right? 24/7, and that's what new relationships are all about. Getting to know each other, being together all the time. And then gradually you find more and more reason to be apart. At some point, as you move apart, toward normal life. Normal life isn't for most of us 24/7. It is for some, but it isn't for most of us. At some point, you get too far apart for one partner. And what does he begin to think? You bailing out of this relationship? We're not spending any time together. Who are you with? Why aren't you with me? Don't you like me anymore? You begin to feel anxious because you're not spending enough time together. Being outside your comfort zone results in anxiety. So what happens in a relationship is when one or both people are not feeling like they're spending enough time together, is that person gets anxious. What do you do when you get anxious? You start trying to pull the other person toward you. You reach out. And maybe you reach out by saying, oh, okay, I haven't seen you for 3 weeks. Why don't you come over for a candlelight dinner Friday night? What's your favorite food? You know, okay, so we'll have some togetherness. That's one way to promote togetherness. That's an invitation pull. The other way is another way. You know these strategies to get the other person close to you is, I don't think you care about me. I don't think you like me. I think I'm going to go pout. I think I'm going to, whatever. Threat, paranoia, anxiety. Try to get the other person to come to you. Any sane person in response to that is going to go farther away, right? You just, excuse me. So you want to develop positive ways to bring the other person in the direction that you need the relationship to go. And what happens in relationships, in immature relationships, is that people are constantly manipulating and trying to push or pull the other person in the direction that they want to go, or pulling away from. If I'm feeling too close, too much togetherness, and I need alone time, I can say, you're driving me nuts, I'm out of here. That's one way to get alone. Or I can say, you know, we've spent a lot of time together and I'm beginning to feel like I'm kind of neglecting my inner life in some ways, and so I think in a couple of weeks I'd like to plan a couple of weeks camping by myself, you know, but I want to make sure that's okay with you. And then so you work that out in a positive, supportive way that doesn't threaten the relationship. What often happens in relationships is that people are trying to get more togetherness or more separateness, but they're doing it in ways that are not supportive of the relationship. Bowen says what you want to do is figure out how to get to your comfort zone in a way that doesn't threaten the relationship. And ideally, you want to work out a plan, a way of being together that lets both of you be in your comfort zone enough that you can deal with it. Some people don't do that. It's a very useful notion to realize that what both people are doing is a balancing act. Individually, they're doing a balancing act between separateness and togetherness to try to get to a place where they're comfortable. And as a couple, they're doing that more complex balancing act of trying to negotiate so that they're in their comfort zones, both of them together, enough of the time to make the relationship seem like it's a useful relationship. It would help if they started off with some overlap so they can find this space. They can find the pattern for the week or the month that lets them manage. If they're too far apart, then the relationship is a push-me-pull-me back and forth constantly, and nobody's happy. Easy relationships are the ones where both people have the same comfort zone. And that may be toward either end. I know, I'll give you a couple of examples from my repertoire of friends. You have to be careful if you become my friend, because then you become a case study for an example. I have one couple that I've been friendly with for many years who never spend time apart. The last time we chatted about this, they were off to some vacation. They have been married, 1965, 40 years. 40 years. They can count the number of nights they have not spent together. 40 years. They can count them. It takes all four hands, and the number is less than 20. Okay. So about every other year, there's one night they don't spend together. Every one of those nights has been because one of them was on business, and they have both had active careers. They've managed to be together. They just refuse the assignments that require them to be apart. So they've either been business or family emergency. They both have elderly parents now, and sometimes they won't go together. And they said actually the time they've spent apart the last 5 years has been more in the last 5 years than in the previous 35 years. And they do everything together, and they're wonderful company. One of them wants to be in a book club, book discussion group. They're both in the book discussion group. One of them gets on the board of a chamber music society. That was one of them. They're both on the board of the chamber music society. One of them wants to volunteer at a community theater. They both usher it. It's amazing, right? It would drive me nuts. But they're fine. They're both in their comfort zone, and it is way over there in the togetherness end. I have another couple of friends, a couple, they are married, who've had a lot of problems with togetherness and separateness in their lives. This is their third marriage. Each of them is now in her third marriage. And they have worked it out. They have found each other. And it's a match made in heaven. They have two homes. They have always had two homes. They've been married about, well, they've been together about 16 years now. They have always had two homes. And the homes currently are three states apart. And they have different seasons in the two homes. And they both love both homes, and they spend 6 to 8 weeks at a time together in one of the homes. And they've got a great pattern. They love it. They party. They have lots of friends. They do work. They have a great time. And then after about 5 or 6 weeks, the togetherness becomes too much, and the separateness that they both have a strong need for begins to make them anxious. So they want to, and he puts the dog in the Jeep and he drives three states away and he goes to the other house and he can do whatever he wants there. She says it's wonderful. He puts his guns on the dining room table. That's just fine. And he can disassemble his antique guns and he can put them on the dining room table and he can drop his clothes wherever he wants. And he can eat cold beans out of a can if he wants. And he can do whatever he wants. And then after a month or two of that, she gets in the other car. She drives. She warns him that she's coming. He has a woman who comes in and cleans the house. She arrives. The house is always absolutely perfect. And they have a great time. They party in their new house. What they've done is they've figured out how to do the 24/7, and they can do honeymoons 3 or 4 times a year for a month. And then when the honeymoon begins to fade, then they need to separate until they begin to miss each other. And that takes about the same amount of time, and then they come back together. So they do the 24/7, and then they do the 0/0. And they just alternate this, and they alternate the two homes. They kind of hopscotch between the two. They put a lot of mileage on the cars. And they're perfectly happy. They love their life. They've got it really set. And their friends, many of their friends, think they're bizarre. They're nuts. I think they've really got it. I think they've figured it out how to deal with the fact that they are very similar, and they are both bouncy people. I knew both of their previous spouses. I knew them each in their previous relationships. And both of those relationships were, they were really, really bad relationships. I didn't know the first ones. I know how they both feel about their first wives, spouses. And one of them apparently was a really nice guy. So they have worked it out. They finally, in the third marriage, found the person whose pattern matches theirs. And while some of their friends don't understand it, Bowen, the spirit of Bowen is up there saying, yep, they got it right. They've figured out they have the same pattern. Nobody else can live with them because of the back and forth nature, but they found each other and they've worked it out. And they have the resources, and they're willing to put their resources toward working it out. And they accept each other in that way. Okay. Questions about that part of Bowen or the other part of Bowen? You can see why he's one of my favorite theorists. He makes a lot of sense. And figuring out whether you're where you are in emotional differentiation. Down here. Figuring out what's wrong with your roommate. Or why you admire your roommate. That's possible too, you know. Most of us admire people who are more emotionally differentiated than we are. Well, I wish I could be like that. Oh, yeah. Thoughts or questions? Got your parents figured out. Got their relationship figured out. Got their divorce figured out. Bowen helps. Okay. In 2 of the 6 minutes we have left, let me just introduce another topic for you to be thinking about. What I want to talk about on Monday, this is Wednesday, all day, right? Okay. What I want to talk about on Monday is the notion of temperament. And so you might want to review the part of the text that covers the notion of temperament, and particularly two aspects of that. The New York Longitudinal Study, which is described, a study by Chess, Thomas, and Birch, who tried to define temperament and its variations. And another part of the text that describes the work of Jerome Kagan. And particularly Kagan and Arcus, and there's another person whose name I'm not remembering. What do we mean by temperament? Temperament is the way that we try to capture the fact that we are different kinds of people. As I mentioned last week, we are wired differently. Some of us are very reactive. Some of us, according to the temperament people, tend to be shy. Some of us tend to be easily arousable and happy, enthusiastic, and impulsive. And those differences can be studied systematically. You can categorize people. The question that comes up is, which ways are useful for categorizing us? How would you describe your own temperament after you read the text? And what does temperament do to the relationships that we have as we develop? And do the relationships that we have any impact on our temperament? Yeah, so I'm going to try to answer all three of those questions on Monday. See you then.